Hi everyone, today I am joined by Jason Gleaves, ufologist, researcher and international author of UF Photo and the Ufology Umbrella. He is ex-Royal Air Force and British Aerospace Airbus Division and has a high expertise in modern civilian and military worldwide aircraft, armaments, recognition and visualization, contributing over the last 10 years on numerous UFO pages, media, and has carried out photographic imagery, video footage analysis on unidentified flying objects and associated anomalies for many UFOologists, ufologists within our community worldwide. He uses the latest updated imagery, computer science, technology, and software available. And I'm super excited to pick your brains today. So welcome, Jason.
Hi there. Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. I guess let's start off with the glaringly obvious question. So how exactly does one end up in your profession and your field?
Well, you probably have to go back to the beginning for myself. I had a sighting with my sister when I was age 7 years old in Liverpool. My sister was eight, and we were playing quite innocently a relative's house upstairs, and we both saw a UFO hover outside the window, and this thing was there for a while, then took off at high velocity, and we just carried on playing like nothing had happened, and I actually forgot about the incident right the way through. It was only a few years when I got into ufology that my sister sort of reminded me that, do you remember when we saw that UFO outside the window? And it sort of jogged my memory and went on from there, you know. So that was probably the beginning for me. And then I have always been interested in Arthur C. Clarke and all the mysterious magazines that you could buy at the time, because, you know, there was no internet then, obviously, when I was younger. So, you know, you got your information was through magazines or just watching the odd TV show and things like that, or go to the library. And I sort of got more and more into it and followed and got really interested in all the famous cases like everybody does. And odd things happened, you know, on and off. And when I joined the Air Force much later, obviously jumping a little bit ahead, that I had other incidents that happened when I was in the Air Force. There was, I was at RAF Cosford, which is a base in the Midlands in the UK. It's near Wolverhampton, Telford area. And during 1993, there was a huge triangle-shaped craft come down over the base. It was seen that evening throughout the UK, or should I say a craft of similar description was seen by numerous people throughout the UK, like on-duty policemen, members of the public. And it's all there. You know, anyone can look this stuff up. It's all there, you know, on Google and wherever you want to look. This craft basically came down over the base where there was a young airman on the airfield guard post, and it was described the size of a battleship. It was that big.
Wow.
And then it took off at high velocity, and it went on to another RAF base, which is nearby Cosford, about 10, 15 miles. RAF Shawbury, and the air traffic controller on duty at the time, they got a lock on this thing. They saw a craft come in of similar description. Whether it was the same one, we're assuming it was, but of similar description, this craft came in, and it was firing thin pencil-like laser beams down towards the ground. And the impression the air traffic controller got at the time was that it was actually looking for something. So it was documented, you know, there's a lot of documents on this case. It's well covered. And of course, the day after, Nick Pope, who was in the Ministry of Defence at the time at Whitehall, he came out and interviewed everybody that saw this craft. You know, it was the guard commander, guards, RAF police, and obviously, you know, other members of the public. So that was sort of, it went on from there. And then it sort of led into me looking really into ufology even more, you know, getting more interested in it, looking at old cases and cases I've been brought up on, you know, that I've actually looked at and studied over the years. And I've actually debunked a couple of them myself just by going in and doing the research. Yeah, everybody who comes into this, into the ufology side, they tend to go through this a little time in their life where I call it the Richard Dreyfuss syndrome, where, you know, the character off Close Encounters, where I'm sure everybody's seen that film, where he sees a UFO as an encounter, and then he just goes totally off his nuts, you know, and he doesn't understand what's happening to him, and he ends up, you know, the craft and all these people come together. And, you know, it's very sort of true to life, because you do tend to start reading more books and watching more YouTube videos, and you just can't get enough information and you just want to know more. And basically, you know, they're the sort of things that happened.
So when you saw the UFO with your sister, what did it look like? Was it big? And do you remember how you felt reflecting on it?
At the time, looking back, I've sat down with my sister since, obviously, and in my first book, I actually did an illustration between myself and my sister of what we saw together. And it was basically your standard metallic disc-shaped craft. And it stayed hovering there for quite a while. But again, it goes back to me actually forgetting what I'd seen. I mean, I was 8 years old, 7 years old at the time, my sister was eight. And whether it was important to us, I don't know. Or another thing comes into play, probably missing time and lost memories, and, you know, that type of thing.
And that deliberate keeping you like in that amnesia sort of state as well, until you're ready to recall and be in a position to remember.
Yeah, yeah. And I did, you know, later on when it, you know, it actually sort of came back, and it was like, wow, it was like a brick wall hitting me. And it sort of gave me that jog to get more into the ufology. And I just started analysing. I've always had things a lot to do with computers, and I've always had the latest software and, you know, Photoshop, that type of thing. I've always looked into those, you know, that type of thing. So when I was analysing photographs and going in different techniques of looking up using the filters, because when I say Photoshop, you're not actually changing the photographs, you're just using the filters
to enhance.
Yeah, because you don't always see what is in the film or whatever. It just got deeper and deeper, and then that's when I thought, well, I set up the Facebook page, UF Only. And I just putting out what I was actually researching and looking up myself and putting it out there for other people. And then people would start to contact me and say, well, you have a look at my photographs. And I'd say, yeah, sure. You know, go down and give them back to them. If they want to actually put them on public, they could put them on public. If they didn't want to be named, or, you know, I totally respect the privacy, and just give them back their photographs and say, there you go, you know. And it sort of grew from there. And then obviously the videos, I was analysing videos. But Facebook at the time when I was doing it, around 2014, you couldn't put long videos on there. So I was having to set up the YouTube channel so I could put them on there for people to see. And that's basically where it grew. It just got bigger and bigger.
And so what kind of reaction do you have from people when you tell them that this is your job?
Well, it's not. I mean, I've got a full-time job. This is something that I've always done on the side, but it's become more of a full-time job than my normal job. So
I was going to say, like, it seems like, because you spend so much time, like all the content that you put out, and I guess it's like a passion, isn't it? And it seems like, to me, I always think it seems like your full-time job.
It does see. Yeah, it feels like that, certainly sometimes. But I get more enjoyment, really, out of analyzing photographs for people, and basically they're looking for answers just like I did at some point. And there was nobody really there doing what I'm doing now. So if I can analyze a photograph for somebody and give them an answer, whether it's a good answer or a bad answer, meaning, you know, if it's a good answer, if they want it to be a UFO and I don't know what it is, then I will say it's a UFO. But if I think it's a bird or an aircraft or some sort of weather phenomenon or a drone or, you know, anything like that, I will tell them as well.
When I could never say 100% whether I've seen a UFO. I spend a lot of time stargazing. I have definitely seen some interesting sky activity, especially when I was in Sedona, Arizona. But recently I saw in the sky, it was like this orange and white flashing light, and it looked like an orb. And at first I thought, oh, maybe it's too big to be a satellite. And because I stargaze so often, I know the satellites and I see them sort of zipping across. And then I was like, gosh, it's not a plane, because it wasn't going in like a direct sort of line. It was kind of like bopping around in like a weird circular. And I was just like, what is this? I don't think it was a UFO. But then I saw recently you popped something up, or Peter Maxwell Slattery had like something, and it was the same night that he had just back a few weeks ago in October, that he had put something up too. So I guess for people who are looking at the sky, what does a UFO look like? Would it flash, or is it more just like an orb?
You say UFO, I mean, people have got the wrong context of what that, you know, UFO is what it is. It's an unidentified flying object. But when you say it more now, you know, today than in the past, people will just assume it's extraterrestrial or out of this world. And it's not, it's a UFO. You don't know what it is. But if you want to go out actually stargaze as such, there's lots of good tools and free tools that you can use to go out. You know, you just get yourself a good pair of binoculars. They're generally quite good. I mean, you've got telescopes, obviously, and night vision cameras and go into more depth. But you can just go out, if you've got good eyesight and see the stars, you know, you'll see something anomalous, you know, if you're looking. And then to help you with the sky watching, there are a lot of apps out there that will help you as well. So you've got Heavens Above, I think it's called, and it tells you exactly your location on the planet, your coordinates, and it tells you exactly what satellites are flying over. Yeah, so, you know, you can eliminate those out of, if you see something unusual, you can eliminate those. You've also got, there's plenty of aircraft apps where you can see what aircraft are flying around as well. So, you know, you can narrow it down by eliminating those two elements straight away. You know, you can say it's a satellite or it's an aircraft. If none of those, then you can look at the star maps as well. You know, people misidentified stars, you know, and if it's twinkling away, you know, is it something you usually seen? Have you seen it before? Or, you know, you can do a lot of basic things to eliminate a lot of things while you're sky watching.
I use a good app called Skyview, and I really enjoy that. I do go through the process of elimination. And a lot of my friends are like, oh, but how can you be sure? And I said, well, how often do you spend looking at the sky at night? Like, a lot of people just don't spend an hour or two out there. And I spend a lot of time walking at night. And since I guess also with the intention to see it, but yeah, it's good, a process to deduce what you're seeing. And then I do get excited when I have, and I document it. I just write like a little note, like, I'm not sure what I'm seeing, but it's definitely not any of those things. And you do get a little bit excited and you think, oh, like what's going on up there?
Yeah. A good thing about you documenting, you know, what you've seen, and you've got a date, a time, a location, you can go back and look at these apps. And there's generally a part in the app where you can actually go back and check that date and where your location. So, you know, you don't have to have these apps at the time straight through. You can go backwards and check.
I would just encourage everyone to do that anyway, because there's like cool asteroid showers and there's all sorts of things happening in the sky, which is just enjoyable to watch. But I wanted to talk about your book, which, if people are interested, it's an incredibly fascinating book called The UFOlogy Umbrella. And it talks a lot, there's a, like, I would call it jargon. And I think for a lot of people who are sort of diving into it, it can be a little bit convoluted and can be a bit like, whoa, what's happening here? But when you talk about extraterrestrial contact, is that when you're referring to like CE1, CE5? Because I've noticed on the SETI websites and a few other people that's what they refer to. Could you maybe explain to everyone like what that means and why you use it and how that kind of came about?
Yeah, it's well, basically my first book that I wrote, The UFO Photo, is basically what I do with the analyzing of photographs and things like that. So I was basically showing people, I wanted a book. It wasn't like a basic DIY book for people getting into ufology or trying to learn more. And I was just telling them the basics of what to look for, how to analyze them, and the electromagnetic spectrums, you know, the different frequencies of light and how to analyze what we can see outside of our own visual rate, because outside of ours, you've got x-rays and gamma rays and everything else that we can't physically see, but we've got instruments that can read those and see things. So it was basically people wanting to dip their toe in and try go down that avenue of the images. But the second book was a sort of follow-on from it, and it was a more in-depth look of the... There are basically seven categories of close encounters, 1 to 7, you know, and I've tried to split them up into the categories that they are and then put cases to the categories so people could actually understand a little bit more. But a lot of these categories do cross over each other, you know, like CE1 is like a basic sighting in which one or more UFOs, aerial phenomenon described as sources or, you know, that type of anomaly or craft. And it's not attributed to known modern day tech. So it's unexplained lights in the sky, mm-hmm. which they're probably the most common of sightings. And then you've got CE2, which is UFOs being witnessed or seen, and it's associated to be known to the phenomena. So crop circles, that type of thing, terrain damage if a UFO has crashed, like Roswell, that type of thing. You can also go further. So you've got scarred or mutilated animals. You can go down that road where, you know, people have been on about, you know, what's happened to livestock, etc. You've got electronic or mechanical interference or damage. So when people have had sightings or experiences with UFOs and their cars cut out, or the radio or the TV's been interfered with, or the internet, you know, like we've said before, we have a lot of interference with the internet. And then you're also, it veers off really into the catalepsy, so you into the trance state where people have body seizures and sort of out-of-body experiences, that type of thing. So that's what I was saying, they're quite big fields that a lot of things can fit into. And then you've got the close encounter of the third kind, which probably a lot of people know about through the Steven Spielberg film, because that's what it was about, really, you know, close encounter of the third kind, where you UFOs visually seen, it's spotted, and it further includes confirmation so that, you know, that the object is actually there. You can physically see a craft. A good thing about the third was, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have probably heard of Dr. Hynek, mm-hmm. and he come out with the books in the 50s through the military about trying to say that UFO is basically not real and trying to debunk the whole ufology field itself. But he actually, through his research and what he went into himself, he actually became a believer. But he actually had a cameo role in Spielberg's film in Close Encounters.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, he's the guy near the end where the craft comes down and he's got the pipe in his mouth. That's actually Dr. Hynek himself. So but he actually came up with 1, 2, and 3, which is CE1, 2, and 3. And since that era, you know, we've moved on in ufology and a lot more different things have happened. So it's gone up 4, 5, 6, and 7. So close encounter of the fourth kind, we're talking human abduction, mm-hmm. by an extraterrestrial being, different kinds of beings, obviously, you know, your greys, your reptilians, your mantid, you know, and greys, there are so many different types of greys, obviously,
yeah,
that people have talked about. You're actually taken on board a craft, but you're in the custody of an ET, so you could still be on the earth, to be fair, and taken on the craft through consciousness, that type of thing.
That happens to me occasionally, and I know I'm being worked on in a medical capacity.
There you go. So that's close encounter of the fourth kind. So that's sort of come about because of people like yourself that have come out and spoken about their experiences, and we couldn't really pigeonhole them in one, two, or three. It's come about because of that. C5, that's contact with any type of ET entity through some kind of audible form, communication, and it can be initiated either through the human or the ET, so vice versa. And that's where people get telepathic communication, which is, again, contact in some form. And then we were going a little bit more out there with, obviously, C6, where the inhabitants or ETs or whoever, they cause death or injury to humans. So there have been cases where in the past where retrieved craft, they've actually found human body parts on board. So it's a little bit more, you know, not very nice, but no. it's another category again.
Yeah.
And probably the most controversial of all is C7.
Yeah.
Which is a human or an extraterrestrial mate, sexual intercourse, and artificial insemination. So you're talking about the hybrid beings, the hybrid races. So but basically that's it in a simple terms, 1 to 7. And like I said before, a lot of cases can be pigeonholed in any of those cases, if not a couple of them, you know, so.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find, obviously, I do a lot of galactic work, and I think it is important that people are speaking out about it, not only for data, but just also to help people. Because when I first had it, it's terrifying to talk about it, you know? So I guess the work that you do, it allows people to be like, oh, I'm not crazy. It gives them some sort of sounding board and that logical reasoning aspect as well to them.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and again, there's an awful lot more people waking up to what's actually happening around. You know, you go out and see craft for yourself now. You don't have to watch it on TV, or, you know, you can go to conferences. And I've noticed within a lot of conferences, obviously we're not going on conferences because of what's happening in the world with the pandemic, etc. But, you know, you go to conferences and you're meeting people that are in the same boat as you, the experiencing the same things, that they're looking for the same answers as yourself. You know, they've probably got answers that you need, and vice versa. And you can listen to some fantastic speakers who can give you the information, or certainly put you in the right direction to start looking.
And they can articulate it. I guess one of the biggest problems for me is I find it incredibly hard to articulate with clarity what's happening or what I'm experiencing. That's kind of a good segue into what's the process when people come to you. So I know they come with you with footage, but do people come with like accompanying stories like we've just kind of done, and then do you categorize them? So can you maybe walk through the process, like what you do, and then with the technology? And
well, basically what I'll approach every image or footage exactly the same. I won't deviate from the way I go about it. So I'll always try and ask the person for the original photograph. What I mean by the original photograph, you know, if it's an old 35mm photograph, old digital media, you know, before pre-digital, I would ask for the negative, or, you know, the original, best original photograph they've got. Or even with the digital photographs, you've got to remember that they will degrade over time. So if you say I send my original photograph to you and you send it to somebody else, each time it will degrade in visual, in the pixelation and things like that. So if you've always got the original photograph to work from, you've got the best chance of getting the best outcome, if you know what I mean. And then basically what I'll do, I'll upscale that photograph. So I'll put it through the software that I use, and it's just a standard computer software where anyone can, you know, download or buy these things, and it will upscale it. So I'll go to, you know, a 1080 high definition, and all you do in basically when you upscale a photograph is, you know, if you got a photograph, it doesn't matter which photograph you've got digital, and you actually zoom into it, all you'll see is pixelation and tiny squares. But if you actually upscale that photograph first and then you zoom in afterwards, you lose less detail, so you get more detail out of it. And then, so after that process, I'll run on to running it through just basic filters. Again, like I said before, it's just basic Photoshop, but it's not Photoshop being used to actually change the photograph. It's just being used with the filters. So you can invert certain images. You can, bring up the brightness. You know, I'm trying to keep it really simple for people to, it's not rocket science. Anyone can do this. You can go in and just play around with your photograph, because most of the time you won't actually see what's in that photograph until you actually enhance it. And it's pretty amazing. Like I say, I do a lot for Peter Slattery.
Yeah.
And I put him in the top 5% in the world of contactees and experiences, because the footage I get from Pete is just fantastic. It's amazing. And when he sends me images, I just know that I'm going to get something good. You know, I've done that many for him now.
Yeah, that's exciting too, I guess. So you know you're going to uncover something amazing.
And there is actually something, I can't say a lot about it at the minute, but there's a documentary we're going to be making soon. And there's going to be some really good footage in that.
Oh, awesome.
So, it doesn't matter who, anyone can contact you and you can do it. And you can do it yourself. You know, you can get out there and do it. And when you actually enhance it, and there's another process I do later on where I overlay different filtered photographs. And I think NASA are original people to have done it. And what it does, it makes a lot of images go 3D. So it brings out more detail again. But more often than not, if it's a man-made object, or it's a natural object like a bird, or if it's a man-made object like an aircraft or something, it's amazing that how it will bring that detail out. And most of the time you can straight away get to, the problem of, or, the solution of finding what that object is.
Yeah, I was going to go back to when you were in the Air Force days, and I was just wondering, how there's so much secrecy, or there was so much secrecy, especially from the US, about disclosing information and things. When you said that you had to, there was when you had the laser situation, there was reports and things, that seems it was quite welcoming, and it was wanted to have that information shared. But are there cases and sightings that are heavily documented and are kept away from the public? Everyone wants to ask those questions, because I think so many people I talk to are but there's so much more, they're not telling us, they're not disclosing information about. And I thought, well, since you were in the Air Force, does that happen? I think we have such misconceptions about what really goes on.
There's an awful lot of things that will happen that no one will find out about. So if a pilot, a fighter pilot, or somebody had an encounter, an interaction, or an experience, and he wrote a report, or he had footage, or anything like that, it would be so hushed up, as any Air Force in the world would do. It's only lately that they've actually start releasing stuff. To the Stars Academy, Tom DeLonge, and they're actually releasing the gun footage. The flare where they're following the UFO and they're going, wow. And, you just know damn well that there's archives.
Where is it?
Yeah. And even, you got to remember, even the footage that has been released, and the military, or say the US military, are doing this slow drip. Slowly dripping little bits of information out there. Like today, do you see the news today where they've said there is, they discovered water on the far side of our moon? That's actually on the news today. And you're thinking, well, they probably knew about that a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it's just the slow drip feed effect, because I personally don't think a lot of mankind is actually ready for contact.
No.
I really don't. I think they're just going to meltdown, and, especially if E.T. shows up and there's a craft and everyone goes, wow, you know, and we're all friends now and we go on from here. And then people are going to start saying, yeah, people are going to start saying, well, how do you power your craft? Or if we've got craft similar, how do you power them? And if they're free energy devices powering the craft, they're going to be saying, well, why have we been using petrol, gas and oil and when we didn't need to? And
so many just, and interdimensional things, then the quantum field, it's a lot for people to process. When I think it was in one of Peter's, he has this amazing series about ascension teachings. And if anyone's interested, I highly recommend it's a great introduction and it's on Edge of Wonder. If that's still up and running. And he talks about like UFOs even landing on top of you. They don't have to be these huge crafts. I think that's another misconception too. They can be all different sizes and apparition, shapes, energetic things. Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, can you talk about like, because someone asked me the other day, like, well, do you get the structure of the craft and the ships? Like, can you see doors? Can you see windows? I thought, well, that's a great question to throw to you.
Yeah. Well, what you've got to think, a lot of people, like you've just said, where people are asking questions, they don't actually believe there is a UFO. I say a UFO just because people don't know what I'm talking about, but see a craft. If they see a UFO, if it's actually nuts and bolts, they won't believe it until they see it. Now, we've got to start thinking outside the box. You've got to start thinking interdimensional craft. And a lot of these craft don't operate even in our frequency. They're outside of our frequency. Yeah, yeah, you could stand outside and you could have 10 craft around and you wouldn't know because they're in a different frequency that you physically, the human eye can't see, you know. And that's where a lot of our equipment and our cameras and things like that and the infrared cameras pick up these craft because they're in that frequency, but the human eye can't see them. So, you know, another good way to look at it is look at yourself as if you're a radio, a normal transistor radio, and you can tune into thousands of different radio channels, but you just tune into one, which is ours now that you can actually see and you look around you and touch things. But if you could tune into all those other frequencies that are still there at the same time, you just can't interact with them or see them, then, but you know, that's what you've got to see is the craft that they're so, it's such a bigger picture that we can't see. A lot of people can't see. People are waking up to it.
Yeah, and I think there's been a huge surge, especially like, I mean, I think back to me when I had my huge awakening and then I had all sorts of experiences happening and it's been incredibly fast-tracked. And so I had no other choice but to kind of be like, oh, okay, well, maybe this is a possibility. And I always say to people, look, until it happens to you, I used to be incredibly skeptical. My dad used to tell me stories of his friend who was in the SAS here and was writing a book about all this type of stuff. And I was like, always a person who wanted proof. But now, what you just said before about the radio frequency and being like a little transmitter, because I speak light language, which is like a galactic channel, it's exactly the same. It's just I'm tuned into a different frequency, and it's really hard to explain to people. I'm like, well, we have so many languages, you know, what's one more? And it really is kind of becoming more open and in tune with the bigger picture. You know, I think it's very insular to think that it's just humans and that's kind of it. Another question that a lot of listeners would be wanting to ask, and I have my own thoughts, and this is, why do you think they show themselves, these objects? Like, why do you think they appear?
I think that there's probably an awful lot of visitors coming here that will just come to view us. It sounds coarse, but we're probably like a zoo. We're probably like a zoo to them.
Yeah, like data collection. Probably,
Way in advance. Yeah, well, they're way in advance to us, superior in intellect and technology, and they're just passing by, and we're just the local zoo to come and have a look at and see how the humans are getting on. fighting amongst themselves. And then there are obviously the, you know, you can go into the other craft where people like yourself, Peter, you know, many people that are having interactions, they're looking into this deeper because they're being involved with the ETs. You know, there's a two-way thing going on. And I think the craft that show themselves, they're showing themselves because, one, you're probably ready to see that craft because you're awakening to seeing the craft. you're opening, your frequency is opened up towards, so your body, meaning your eyes, your brain and everything, can focus on that craft when you would never see it before, you know.
Yeah, because you're emitting a different frequency. Yeah,
you know, there's an awful lot to be said. And I say to anybody, a lot of people, when they approach, they say, well, I've never seen a UFO. I really want to see a UFO. And you basically just got to go outside and just ask.
Yeah, it's the intention as well.
Yeah, because they won't show unless you're ready.
No, I recently got infrared cameras set up. We're doing up our house. We've got like all sensors and cameras, and the infrared one has picked up some phenomenal activity, mostly orbs and things. But I hope to set the intention to see more, because the amount of stuff it picks up is insane. Like, and again, it's stuff I can't see, but I can often feel it in a different, you know, like I get the tingles, or I know there's pressure, or you can sense it for those people who are sort of energetically in tune with that. So that's, to me, that's fascinating. Like, I can't wait to spend ages like looking at this infrared technology.
Yeah, yeah, and you'd be surprised what you will actually pick up. Yeah, of course you will see satellites, you will see aircraft. You know, the aircraft will stand out like a sore thumb because they should have their strobe lights on.
Yeah,
you know,
their red and blue lights, yeah.
Yeah, international aviation law, they have to have those on. Even military are the same. A lot of the aircraft apps we were talking about earlier, again, won't show all the military aircraft and the military satellites and what have you, for obvious reasons. But, you know, you will see an awful lot. And with the, you know, the infrared, I've got a set of infrared binoculars, and the amount of things, I've actually put some footage up on my Facebook page, you know, of things I've seen. You know, I've had where there's orbs crossing each other, literally zagging, you know. And Peter, again, with SETI, the stuff he's coming out with.
Oh, SETI does great stuff. I'll post all the links to your sites and your books, and I'll also pop a SETI down, because they're a great place to start, not just about the UFO aspect, but about all sort of spiritual things, really. But they do have a galactic focus. And for me, I found it, just a gentle approach, like an easy easing into it, I guess.
And that's how it should be. You know, it should be, a lot of people feel comfortable going there. You know, James Gilliland and all his crew, fantastic crew.
I'd love to go to Mount Shasta one day when we can travel again. Yeah.
Yeah. Mount Shasta, and you've got Mount Adams, obviously, at the SETI.
Yeah.
That's another big UFO hotspot. They've had, you know, a lot of people go there every year. And again, Pete goes there a lot himself. I gave a talk there a couple of years back via Skype. But, you know, really good conferences there, yeah.
What about hotspots in Australia?
Well, Pete obviously has got a real hotspot where he is. Wherever Pete is, you'll find UFOs. But he's in Victoria.
Yeah, near Mount Buffalo, I think.
Yeah, but like I said to you before, you don't have to be in all these hot spots. You don't have to go. It's nice to go in a remote spot where there's nothing around, no light pollution. You've got a nice, clear, dark sky. Obviously, the skies in the UK, you know, we have a lot of weather, so we don't get only in the summer, really. But yeah, if you've got real clear skies, you know, you can lie down on a bench or get a deck chair out and just, you know, get out there, and that's where you'll see things happening, you know, and it'd be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky in Australia to sort of get out of the city for a couple of hours and you'll see incredible skies. And I live like still in the suburb of Sydney, but I can still see things even with the light pollution. So it's fascinating when you do get further out, like we've got some cool spots. Do you have a favourite UFO story among those you've uncovered?
Well, I've got a few, but
yes,
share them. Probably the footage that I've actually put forward on a couple of TV shows that I think it was Paranormal Caught on Camera that I had it. It was an Argentinian pilot, a civilian pilot, and he'd seen UFOs in the past going up in his flights, and he knew that he was going to see more UFOs. So this time, I think it was 2014, he took his mobile phone up with him. And the camera on it is okay. It's not like the cameras we have today on our phones, but it was okay. And he actually captured two UFOs, Buzz's aircraft, right in front.
Jesus.
And the footage is on my YouTube channel. Anybody wants to go and see it, go on there and you'll see the Argentinian pilot. And he's flying along. You can see the view out of the front cockpit where he's flying. You see the clouds. He's about 5,000-10,000 feet up. So nice clear skies other than the cloud. And then he said he saw the craft coming in from his left-hand side. And it was a large elongated object, and it buzzed right in front of his aircraft, and it was followed by a smaller one, and then it flew to the right hand side of his aircraft. They teamed up together in a formation and came back as a pair and buzzed his aircraft again. It's probably about a minute long, if that, the footage, but I've actually analyzed it and gone in, and I still think it's probably one of the best pieces of footage out there at the minute.
Did you ever speak to this Argentinian?
Yeah, he didn't want to come forward, and
yeah, fair enough.
A lot of people don't, but he was quite happy
to
share it out, and we put it out. I think I've just done something with a Japanese TV company. They wanted to air it and stuff. Yeah, and I actually analysed it in my first book, UFO Photo. So there's images in there as well of the. You can see it's an elongated, large craft, and then it's followed right behind by a smaller craft that's more square. Definitely not civilian. Could be covert military craft, but I don't think so. And he certainly wouldn't buzz an aircraft directly in front, and he certainly wouldn't do it twice.
No, too many risks involved, I would imagine. I guess I was going to say, due to all your analysis, is there a pattern, like is there a craft shape or structure that is more commonly seen?
No, but then there has been, if you look at it in more detail, I find there are still a quite wide berth of different type of craft. But if you go back and look over different decades, you will see there are different traits. So, you know, I think starting off with probably like your disc-shaped craft, metallic or whatever, you know, people have seen. And then they went into elongated or the cylindrical rod-shaped, you know, quite large craft. And then, you know, you've got overly elliptical-shaped. I mean, there are literally that many different types that you can, you know, describe. But probably today, round 2000, you know, around 2020 and earlier, you're probably seeing, a lot more people are seeing orbs. And whether that is actually, you know, a transportation of extraterrestrials, a craft, or is it an interdimensional being in a craft? You know, there are a lot of theories, a lot of people saying it's this, it's that. But I am getting a lot more people and you know, analysing a lot more images with orbs involved.
So where do you see your work kind of heading in the next couple of years? I guess with the way of the world and it seems to be this openness that people are sort of talking about it more, do you think you'll see like a huge influx of just more stories and informations and photos and images coming forward?
Yeah, I really don't think it'll stop. I think even with more and more people, everyone's got a mobile phone now, you know, virtually everybody, and they're really good cameras. Everything's easily accessible. Everything's easily be, you know, if you take a photograph, you can put it straight onto social media. It can be circulated around the globe very quickly. You know, that's open to abuse, obviously, with fakes and, you know, that there are people out there that will go out the way to fake UFOs and, you know, and, you know, you're never going to stop that sort of thing. It just leaves a bad taste in your mouth, really. But yeah, I think more and more people are going to come forward as they're waking up to what's going on. And, you know, disclosure, they say disclosure will happen soon. I think it will do, but I mean, disclosure's already happened because just look around at the people that are actually out there, you know, with the information and the footage and the images that they've got, you know, and, you know, they're having interactions with ETs.
On Cosmic Disclosure, like the Deep Space Program, like that's a whole, you know, and then the German aircraft, there's so much stuff out there if you are wanting to look into it, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. you know, and I think it will just increase, really, because basically more and more people are waking up. But, you know, that's the be-all, end-all of it. People are actually seeing through the BS that the governments are kicking out around the world. You know, they can see what's going on. And they're just not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, and I guess also just someone like me, I'm just a curious person and I just find it interesting. I'd rather have access to all that information and make my own mind up rather than not. So I guess, like I always say to people, do your own research and come to your own conclusions. And if it resonates, great. And if not, maybe later down the track it will.
Yeah, yeah. And there's so many people out there you can research on. And you'll find that when you do start researching in more depth into different cases or different websites, or you literally five new doors will open in different directions, you know, because that was why I called the second book The Ufology Umbrella, because that's how I see it all, the word ufology as the main umbrella and everything cascading off into hundreds of different, you know, categories, you know, abductions and sightings. And
yeah, and you meet the right people you're meant to. Like, there's just no coincidences. Like, and when I was in Sedona, I was very clueless to all of it. I mean, I knew I was, like, in an area where that stuff was sighted and there was, like, brochures for tours and things. But until I started to see it, then my own curiosity was piqued. Then I happened to meet, you know, two photographers who were doing sort of night watching and sky watching. And it just, the universe will line it up for you. I truly believe that.
Yeah, yeah. I believe that too, yeah. You know, it's like how I came across Peter. It was just through my own research, you know, and it was through Mary Rodwell. I was watching Mary Rodwell.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, fantastic woman, you know, in our field. You know, she's got so much information, you know, about star seeds and the children. And
yeah, and they can see the crafts and interact with them a lot more than we are, because their frequency is wide open.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess maybe to wrap up, are there some other resources? I mean, obviously I'm going to pop all your links below, but are there any other sites, people? I mean, I know we've mentioned a few and I'll reference them as well, but are there any others you can think of, or books or things for people wanting to dip their toe in into the ufology arena?
Yeah. Well, like I say, not just to plug mine, but, you know, mine are basically, if you want to dip your toe and get in there, it'll lead you on the path to that, you know, maybe the path that you need to go on. If you look at the SETI.org, you know, that's James Gilliland, you know, in the SETI, America, US. Then you've got Peter Slattery, ESETI.Australia. I think there's an ESETI in Tokyo, Japan. Top of my head, I can't remember his name. Sorry. But if you just go on in your search engine and on Facebook, there are so many groups out there. There are so many, you know, good groups, you know, that actually giving really good information. And maybe the information is just what you need to find. You know, it might just that little snippet of information that sets you on your way.
Yeah, it just reminded me, there's a really funny TV show called People from Earth. I don't know whether you've heard it or seen it.
I've heard of that, yeah.
And I remember watching it going, whoever has written this is definitely an experiencer and definitely someone with galactic knowledge, because whilst it's very funny and a lot of it, I was like, wow, this is resonating so much. But I also, just off the back of that, there are groups around and people who will talk to you about, you know, contactee experiences and things, so that I know that can be I know Mary Rodwell does an awful lot, especially with children, but there are people who are willing to talk, you know, like in safe spaces, and to not judge and just talk about it and hold space for people going through an experience like that. It can be quite daunting to share with other people.
It really can, you know. It's but again, myself on my page, on UF only, if anybody needs any help with analyzing, you know, of images or footage, or if, like you just said, it's something deeper, you know, then if I don't know how to help them, I certainly know plenty
someone
of people
to
in
do
our
fit.
Yeah, I can point them in the right direction. You know, it'll be a safe bet that, you know, I can point them wherever they're going to need, whatever specific sort of thing they're going to need.
Yeah, and I think that's the other thing too. Like, if someone does come to you about it, just to keep an open mind and hold space, and to perhaps, I think, as a collective consciousness on the planet at the moment, we're trying not to be so judgmental, you know, and not quickly write people off for the experiences they're having in any regard or any field.
That's it, yeah. You know, because, you know, we've all been there. I just like to think that I could be there for somebody else. So
yeah, exactly. And I always think, gosh, every time I talk about it, I think, oh, I've probably lost a few friends or a few people. But this is, you know, I never in a million years would have thought I would have had the experiences I had and be so interested in galactic things and staring at the sky so much. But here I am.
Yeah. Well, you might have thought you've lost so many friends, but you've also gained a damn sight more.
Yeah, and you get the right ones.
The right people, yeah.
Yeah, to keep you in alignment with whatever your soul mission purpose is. And thank you so very much for your time and your insights. It's been incredibly awakening and enlightening. And I get so buzzed talking about it. I'm like, calm down, Jen. It's raining all week here, which is a little bit, I always get a bit agitated because I can't go out and stargaze. But hopefully next week I'll be able to get out there. Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much, everyone. I'll pop all those links below. And if you're interested, definitely, and if you're curious, definitely have a look around. And we'll talk to you on another episode. Thanks, everyone.